Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today, we have...
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Hey, Daniel. I see you now. Okay, Daniel McAdams, our co-host, as usual, and we're doing this remote, and we have one individual that happens to run our studio off today. So, but we'll be broadcasting from the studio for a while. And also, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. And we have a few items that Daniel and I want to go over. And first off, we want to, this is nothing brand new, but there's a story on anti-war that bothers us a whole lot. As Zelensky says, he's working on a 10-year military aid deal with the U.S. And so that means that we're locked in. Of course, we've been locked in for a long time. And it's not because they lock us in. It's because we lock ourselves into it, because we're always looking for, big deals and control and building our empire. So this is very important that we continue to work with this, because it's not in our interest. It's not constitutional. It's not moral. And it's literally leads to corruption. So, and also it gets to the point where the people who are on the receiving end of our taxpayers' money become very aggressive. I tend to think that when Zelensky comes over here and starts talking to us, he sounds like he's lecturing us or giving us orders. I might be the only one in the country that believes that, but if you think if that is anywhere true, that he sounds like that, why do we tolerate it? Why do we put up with people that push us around? And, you know, they don't do it just for, oh, well, we'll back off a little bit here and we'll get them some money and we'll tighten our wallets and our spending so that we can afford it. No, it's forever. It's bigger, and there's no limitation. Of course, that's a reflection of our foreign policy and our monetary policy and what we do with our debts. And of course, I believe it's all going to come to an end because we can't afford it. But right now, they're very, very aggressive. Now Zelensky, the whole thing is he wants a 10-year deal, and already there's quite a few countries that have signed up, but they always sign up in a token way. It's not the commitment that that we have when we sign up and what our people have, not for this year or next year. It's for a long time. A lot of people said, well, you don't have to worry about it. This is just passing it on to our next generation, to our kids. And I said, well, the kids are already suffering from what we're doing. But it just gets worse, and the grandchildren will be included and whatnot. So that's why Daniel and I have been talking a long time about foreign policy, a long time. And of course, our positions are very clear that we think that we're overly aggressive, and we believe in a non-interventionist foreign policy. And we're sick and tired of being pushed around. But we also realize it's limited, because you just can't do this forever and ever. And I want to, welcome Daniel once again, and let him tell us a little bit how to change all this. And he's been working with me for a long time. And I have to say, Daniel, okay, what can we prove that we have done? Yeah, we've called attention to it, and we do get more supporters. And it's not like we should cry about not having help. We do. It's just that there's some people in special places that have power and influence in a government, the judicial system, and we have to overcome that. And we're strong believers that get the truth out, and eventually the American people will do the right thing.
Yeah, well, Dr. Paul, democracy is a pretty inconvenient thing for the deep state and the Uniparty. And we've seen supposedly a six-month struggle to pass this $61 billion, which is put on top of the other 100 and some billion dollars that we've already put into Project Ukraine. So what they're trying to do is to prevent, and I apologize to our listeners, my voice is a bit rough today. What they're trying to do is trying to basically bake the whole thing into the cake. So we don't have to have democracy. We don't have to have elected representatives voting on this again. We don't have to have a president who may oppose more money, an ever increasing endless train of money to Ukraine. So they're going to create a deal to basically to tie with the expectation that President Trump, who doesn't seem to be opposing this money anyway, but with the expectation that Trump will be back in the presidency to make it impossible for him to conduct an independent foreign policy. So he'll have to just follow the terms of this agreement. And as you say, Dr. Paul, it's unconstitutional, it's immoral, it ties the hands of a future generation, and it essentially makes, why would you bother voting? If no matter who you vote for, the policy stays the same, what's the point of getting out and voting?
You know, I'm going to read a little paragraph here that sort of demonstrates what I was trying to make about Zelensky and his attitude, his aggressiveness, and bewilders me why we just crawl and go along with this and scrounge around. And I found disgustingly the episode that happened with our speaker. And Daniel already mentioned Trump. We can't know each day where he'll come down. But this is a quote that comes from the anti-war article on Zelensky. Zelensky also called for Ukraine to be accepted into the EU and for an invitation to join NATO. Oh, he has our foreign policy always. That means he's against my positions. I better have a talk with him. He says, we are also preparing for the NATO summit to be held this summer. A strong political signal is needed. The alliance should not be afraid of its own strength or shy away from its own foundation. Every country that shares common values and is willing to actually defend them deserves an invitation to join the alliance, he said. Boy, he's coming across pretty strong. That just amazes me. What gall, you know, what gall. And one thing for sure, their attitude is so powerful, they have no shame. And that's why we should never be surprised at what we hear from the people who are demanding more. But we do keep getting more surprises how easily a lot of our politicians just roll over and they do what they're told to do by foreign entities that want more of our money.
Well, the thing about this $61 billion is it's not for Ukraine. And in fact, the mainstream media in the U.S. all but admits Ukraine is not winning and can't win the war. They're right. Saying that the best that it could hope for is to delay the inevitable defeat. But the other thing that people don't understand is this $61 billion. Now, right now we have an immediate $6 billion weapons deal. Weapons package is being prepared. But what Americans don't understand, and most people don't understand, this weapons are not going to be transferred tomorrow or next week or what have you. These are not weapons from the existing American stockpile of weapons. Under the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, these weapons have to be manufactured, and then they will be sent to Ukraine. So if you look at the fine print about the $6 billion weapon package and the ones that come after it, there will be no deliveries on most of these vehicles, most of these items of military use for 3 years. They're not going to see these things for 3 years. They're not coming for next week. So this has nothing to do with Ukraine. Ukraine will be gone in 3 years at this pace. This is a huge sop to the military-industrial complex, the people with enormous power in the United States to create policy.
You know, this attitude that is so popular and people like it and the voters demand it is in this episode of what we're doing now is bipartisanship. They brag about it. Well, we brought the people together. We got these bills passed. We didn't have any lockdown of government. Well, I think it would be a lot better to close down government than continue to make such hay with having this bipartisanship where they agree to do the bad things. That's the way I see it. When it's tough, they come together, and usually it's with war and spending and deficits and more Federal Reserve controls, all of these things, taxation, that whole thing, they just continue with that. But it's bipartisanship that people should be leery of. And right now, you know, the presidential election, most people are saying, well, most people don't want either of the candidates, and we got to find a new person. But I'm convinced that when you do, you have to find somebody who may be smooth and slick, but inevitably, to get the two sides to come together, both sides are going to sacrifice if they do have a little bit of ideological purity. They give up on it, so they come together. That, to me, is a shame, and yet it's seen as something, you know, beneficial. But if you stick to your guns, I don't know what would have happened to the speaker if he wouldn't have caved in on this budget. I think I think something good could have happened. Maybe the people who liked some of the things that he was saying and how what his positions were to become speaker, they might have been happy. Who knows? But tell you what, they can't continue to do this because, once again, enough people are waking up and they're sick and tired of the perpetual wars and all the debt and the inflation. But there needs to be a lot more activity like what we try to present, and that is the understanding of the economic system and our foreign policy system. And it's not an American system that's doing anybody a favor. It's something that's just to serve the special interests. And like Daniel points out, you know, you don't send the money to these countries. It usually ends up in the pockets of the special interests in this country, most likely the military-industrial complex.
And people might ask, Dr. Paul, well, how can they do that? How can they bind a future president's hand and force them to give aid to Ukraine? Well, there's a constitutional, quote-unquote, way and an unconstitutional way. As you know, Dr. Paul, Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution gives the president the power to enter into treaties based on the advice and consent of the Senate, of two-thirds of the senators present concurring. So they can, Biden could propose a treaty with Ukraine, which would bind the United States to Ukraine. But the other, and I think probably the most likely way, because I don't know that they would get two-thirds, it's possible they would be to enter into an executive agreement, which is not provided for in the Constitution, but through habit of use now has been considered binding to the United States. So you could have an example where Biden enters into an executive agreement with the Ukrainian government and binds the U.S. to 10 years of aid to Ukraine. Now, the question I would have, well, what happens if the government of Ukraine is overthrown or changes or is radically different? What if a pro-Russian head of Ukraine, as there's been several times in the past, what if they come into power? What would happen to the treaty? But nevertheless, there is a way that they can do it, one of two ways. And so I'm not sure exactly what they have in mind.
You know, the Wall Street Journal last year had an article that talked a little bit about motives on why we do these things. He says, last year, the Wall Street Journal reported that the purpose of the bilateral security deals was to lock in long-term support for Ukraine to ensure it would be difficult for a future president to exit. I mean, we see the mixture of Trump back and forth and all, but there's still strong, by, you know, fighting between the partisan issues. So, yes, they're trying to, Trump is a motivation here, because the one thing that overrides most of these deals that they're making is hatred finally blossoms out. And there's a lot of hatred that goes on. And I think that's why we hear such a horrible system and argument and fighting, is because I believe that the American people, you know, the people who oppose Trump, they do that because I think they were jealous that he won the election. I couldn't believe that. So, and then no matter how hard they have tried to punish him, it seems like the better off he gets. And so therefore they have to become hateful. So it's hate. At the same time, bipartisanship, I think, is over and above that. I think that occurs with behind the scenes. That might be more of a reflection of the deep state that has held their cards close to their breast.
Yeah, that's for sure. Do you want to move on now to our second topic, Dr. Paul, to touch on?
Yes, and let me just introduce that to give you a chance to talk about that. This is, you know, we've just talked about corruption in our process, how to go to war and what do they do with the money and people who may have the special benefit. But this one has to do with Joe Biden's brother. Zero Hedge reported on this, embroiled in high-ranking Qatari scheme to provide wealth of introduction. It's more scandal that goes on. So government has been engulfed with it. This is one of the reasons why most libertarians argue the case that many, if not the most, of the problems we face emanate from government power, and people who are dishonest and don't care about the Constitution. So this has been smoldering all along. But I think it's even worse than I thought it could be. But what's going to happen from it? I'm not very optimistic. I don't think Jim Biden is likely to be prosecuted and go to jail.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, you know, Jim Biden, so the Qataris got into some trouble. They found themselves ostracized in their region because of their policies. The Saudis turned against them. And so they were having a tough time getting any leverage. And so they decided to do what very wealthy countries do, which is to start buying American politicians and their families. And so that's what they did. You know, Qatar puts a ton of money into U.S. think tanks, as do other Gulf states. But here's the quote. I think the quote of the whole article is that he got in touch with the highest level of government in Qatar. And he said, quote, "My family could provide a wealth of introductions to Qatar." So if that is not corruption, it's not when he says my family, that's not, you know, the second cousin. That's not Hunter. That's not, you know, we're talking about Joe Biden, the former vice president at the time.
You know, this is really bad news because they finally get around to telling the truth. and then nobody thinks there's anything wrong with it. Oh, my family provide all this wealth and we're half influence. You know, my brother is the president. We can do whatever we want. And nobody seems to care enough. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. Some people do. But the odds of all of a sudden this, you know, being resisted by the large number of people, I think it'll be march on. I hope I'm wrong on that and that they'll actually decide that maybe we ought to do a real investigation. But right now there hasn't been. People have known this has been going on. And some of the same sentiments have been expressed, you know, by Biden himself, you know, when he was a senator. And since then, I mean, it's not like it's a secret. The big secret is that the people don't seem to care enough to put pressure on their members of Congress to do something about it. But eventually, I hope we get it together and do something to stop the corruption.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the objections to this come from people who are not disgusted by the corruption, but are just disgusted that the Democrats are getting the money this time. Because,
probably,
you know, a lot of these people, you know, during Trump's campaign, a lot of people were talking about Jared Kushner and all the deals that he was making as the president's son-in-law. But you didn't have a lot of Republicans having a panic attack over it like they are about this. So the worst thing about Washington is that they don't oppose corruption. They just want to be the ones that are in on it as well.
Well, you know, when I saw some of these numbers and things that go on, you know, they talked about a $200,000 loan and they talk about $1 million here, $1 million there. But you know what? I thought that really, in a way, isn't very much, you know, compared to what really goes on. When you think of the corruption in the financial system and, you know, the FBI, you know, the judicial system, as well as the Federal Reserve System, they deal, you know, not only hundreds of thousands and millions, billions, and even trillions of dollars they talk about. So some of these numbers, that's enough to indict them and show what they're really up to. But even those numbers aren't as impressive as what's really goes on. If they knew what was going on, they said, where did all the money go? Well, I don't know where the money goes, but all I know is wealth is being consumed and the people who are suffering from it. So when you destroy a system like that, I believe that the most vulnerable are the middle class people and the people who, you know, are poor, and they suffer the consequences of the inflation tax. And also the rules and regulations are so onerous that the people suffer. And ultimately, the biggest threat to us is the loss of our liberties when this occurs, because they're always trying to fix it up. But one thing that most people agree is it's not likely that next year, if they get a new people into Congress and all, that all of a sudden there will be a major change in policy, that the policies of the last 70, 80, 90 years, where especially since the Federal Reserve, will automatically reverse itself and we will work our way out of it. I think that's a dream. I think the most important thing we do is what we try to do very hard at the Liberty Report, is to get people to understand why and what they're doing, what are their motivations, and what can we do about it. And maybe educating a new generation of people will make a big difference, because right now we've gone through You know, just think of COVID. What did that do to a generation of young people? And those problems still exist. So I think the real trouble is identifiable. I think the real answers are not complicated. It's just that there are some people who are unwilling, who are benefiting by this, and sometimes people just lack the desire to really understand why there are so many shortcomings. So let's hope, Daniel, that we can contribute, to some of these problems that we have, and that more people would say, you know, the founders basically were on the right track. It wasn't perfect. They knew that themselves, but they made this effort, and we probably had, a document that might have been the best ever written, you know, for the people, and many people survived it. I always argue the case that the benefit of the free market and liberty is so overwhelming, and it's hard to kill it. And it takes years. Just think how long they've been messing up and undermining. Just since 1971, the dollar has been reduced by 97%. So the wealth lasts a lot longer. So the free market really saves these people and perpetuates a system. But eventually, it runs out of steam. And that's what I'm afraid is happening to us today. Daniel?
Yeah, well, I'm going to close. But I would just say, you know, I was a kid during the Carter administration, but I remember there was such a scandal that the president's brother came out with a brand of beer with his name on it, and they thought it was really unseemly that he's trying to take advantage of the family name. So we've gone from having a little bit of beer with his name on it to now millions and millions of dollars. But I'll just close by thanking our viewers for tuning in. Again, I apologize for the quality of my voice, and hopefully I'll be back 100% soon. Over to you, Dr. Paul.
Very good, Daniel. And I, too, want to thank our viewers for tuning in today, and we appreciate very much the support. And we will continue this fight, but it really encourages us when we know we're getting support and in what we're doing. Please turn in to the Liberty Report soon.